The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
This podcast is brought to you in association with La Taverna Friuli, the definitive podcast on the wines of Friuli Venezia Giulia. La Taverna Friuli is a proud supporter of the Italian Wine Podcast. I'm host Wayne Young, and if you're a fan of the Italian Wine Podcast and want to take a deep dive into this fascinating wine region, visit latavernafriuli.com or wherever you get your pods.
Welcome to another episode of Clubhouse Ambassadors Corner. We don't have a lot of people from the audience, but this episode is going to be recorded and it will be up on Italian Wine Podcast. So we have here our supporter of Italian Wine Podcast, La Taverna Friuli. So how are you, Wayne? How are you doing?
I'm doing just great. How are you, Laika?
All good. Quite very busy for the Vinitaly Marathon. It's upcoming. Yeah.
I was going to do a Vinitaly Marathon too, but I decided against it. So if you guys need help, you can always give me a call.
Okay.
But so thanks, Laika, for the opportunity to come in here and chat with one of my favorite wine people in Friuli Venezia Giulia.
Of course, definitely. So before we begin, I would like to introduce to the audience Wayne Young. So Wayne Young is a U.S. expat living in Friuli Venezia Giulia since 2002. He's self-employed wine marketing and communications consultant, wine educator and events coordinator, and the host of La Taverna Friuli podcast. Okay, so before we dive into the discussion, I wanted to ask you these three questions. Why did you select Tamara Podvercic as your favorite producer?
Well, I selected Tamara because when I met Tamara a long time ago at a winery visit at Podvercic, I immediately got this really great energy from Tamara, and she spoke great English. So I was like, I hope to have her as a guest on the pod. She's very young. She's very enthusiastic. She's got a lot of really, really good positive energy.
Yeah.
And so I was immediately overwhelmed with her good vibes. So,
yeah.
And plus, you can't deny that her and her dad's wines are amazing. They're cult wines. They are wines that can be described as cult wines, really. I'm really interested in having a conversation with Tamara, learning a little bit more about why they do what they do.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yes, that's true. Like communications and also her charm would actually be very important in terms of how to also reach out to other people to also try the wines. So tell me more about this cult wines. When was the first time that you tried the wines of Damian Podvercic?
Wow. Oh, I can't remember. It was a long time ago. I can't remember the first time, but I remember being a little bit hesitant about trying the wines from Podvercic because I had heard that they were like heavily macerated orange wines, which isn't normally my thing.
Okay.
And then I actually tried them and I was like, these wines are amazing. And they totally subverted and exceeded my expectations. So I've been a big fan since then. There's a reason why I'm a much bigger fan of Ribolla Gialla now than I was, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. And their wines are one of the reasons why.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's really like an eye opener for you because like you shifted your point of view about cult wines. So since this podcast will be listened by a lot of Italian wine ambassadors all over the world. So tell us, what are the learning objectives that we should be expecting from this interview?
Well, I think one of the things that I really want to learn a little bit more about Podvercic is because Podvercic is quite a name, but I want to know a little bit more about the place and what's special about the place where they make their wines. And I've been there and I've seen it, but I'm really looking forward to listening to Tamara sort of explain the effect of the place on the way they make their wines and how their wines become what they are.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to mute myself and I will leave the floor to you and Tamara, but don't sing.
If you want the last people who are in here to leave, you will let me sing. No, I promise that I will not sing.
Okay. I'm going to mute myself, guys. All right.
Thanks, Laika. All right. Thank you so much, Tamara, for being here. Tamara, you say that you were born at the perfect place and time to fulfill your dreams in this family estate of Podversage. But that wasn't sort of your original plan. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how you got involved in the winery and all that sort of stuff. Or maybe we should take a step back and tell me a little bit about where the winery is located and what's special about this place. Let's start with that. Let's start sort of more with the place than with you. And then we'll get into your family history.
Great. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you
for those beautiful words that you said before about us, about actually also our territory. Today also we are sitting in this beautiful wine academy in Corno di Rosazzo. I'm just quite always charmed about what our territory can give us. Mm. We have such some beautiful pearls, and we have to be aware of what we have and what we can do. So right. Therefore, my father always taught me, thanks also to my mom and my grandpa, my grandma, because actually our family was always a wine producing family.
Okay.
So my father, then it was the first one to start to bottle it. And it's quite a long, dramatic story, but with a beautiful, never-ending end.
Okay.
So long story short, actually we are placed in Coglio. So just at the limit of Italy on the east side with the Slovenian border. And we are actually on Monte Calvario.
Okay.
Which quite a name, Mont Calvary, you know, in a way of we are also taking our cross on our shoulders.
Exactly.
But looking to be redeemed in a way.
Yes.
So we are part of the most south exposed hills from Coglio, from the Gorizia area. And we are now a 15 hectares estate, where actually started from a really small amount, as my father decided to go on his road, on his foot, and started with a really small part of 6,000 square meters in San Floriano, where actually last year I just combined it with my first bought vineyard. It's 1 hectare of free.
Oh, congratulations.
And, it's like fell to close a circle of generations, as my grandpa then bought just close to Monte Calvario at the bottom of the hill in the località Gradisciutta. He bought 2 hectares to continue to produce wine in the Osteria. It was a family owned Osteria, because to know that in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, our territory was quite important for the fruit point of view, wine. Everything was delivered always to Vienna tables.
Okay.
So we were, you know, the history with First World War, Second World War, Cold War even, it was everything destroyed in a way, not only from the pedagogical point of view, but also social. So we were quite destabilized, and therefore also my grandpa opened an osteria to carry on the wine business. Otherwise, to sell wine, today you can be in America, you can be in Japan without any problems. But at the time, to sell in Udine, even like a few kilometers away, it was quite impossible. So everything from Gorizia, it was concentrated there. So my father, yes, actually, he was born in Osteria.
Born in Osteria.
That's true. And he was always working with the vineyards of the family. And then so now we are working on the property of my grandpa, the 6,000 square meters that I told you before in San Floriano.
Okay.
Then the 2 hectares in Gradisciutta.
Okay.
Part of the story of my grandpa. And then it's my father that just fell in love with Monte Calvario. So where we have today 9 hectares in total, and we have still a small part in rent in Piedimonte, that is just the other side of Monte Calvario hill. And now finally the 1 hectare and free just close to the San Floriano part of my generation.
Okay.
So this is what it is. Our soil is quite charming, because, you know, my father to choose to be a winemaker, it means to be, as I said before, in the right time, in the right place. It means that you observe where you are and what you can do.
Okay.
So our soil has this typicity to retain water in summertime. And it's the first mandatory obligation of a winemaker to understand that if you have it, you can do it.
Okay.
Otherwise, techniques can provide you the possibility to work with the nature in order to bring, like to say, irrigation, and therefore the plant can survive in really hot, dry summer times. But our marl and sandstone stratification give us the possibility, the lucky part, to be able to produce incredible quality of grape till the end of the season.
Okay.
So this is the magic trick.
The magic trick. So it's the soil and?
And not only, because
exactly.
The beautiful word terroir
right.
Is always
is everything.
Exactly. A combination of things which actually, again, strike two, we have it.
Okay.
So it's beautiful soil. You always have to look at three things.
Okay.
I haven't done agronomical studies nor enological ones, but my father always taught me you need those three things, and every university should teach those.
And those three things are?
Soil.
Right.
Understand the parallels that dictate the typology of varieties that you can plant. So this means that you have to understand that if you are in Burgundy, you cannot plant Nerello Mascalese.
Okay, so where you exist on the globe.
Exactly.
Okay.
And here we are lucky enough, also by the point of view of climate, because if I'm a really rainy region, as Friuli it is, I have to understand that certain varieties, even from the parallel that we are, can work or not.
Okay.
And therefore also to understand the parallels in a way of height of the hills.
Okay.
Because I have to look at the grape, at the characteristic of it, and understand that on the top of the hill should be always placed Ribolla Gialla.
Okay.
Because if I put Tokaj on the top of the hill, where it's a lot of sun, a lot of wind, because we are a region of winds.
Especially, so, yeah.
Not only rain,
you.
No.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We have also beautiful things like winds. And we have this microclimate from really close to the seaside, but really close also to mountain. So we have this, yes, rain, but also the possibility to make incredible wines due to the drying part of the winds from the sea or from the east, the really interesting and strong Bora.
Okay, Bora wind, yeah, this hard eastern wind that comes down, yeah.
As Monte Calvario is the last hill from the Gorizia area,
okay.
we have no hills that separate us from the seaside, so we have a constant sea breeze.
Okay.
That take away all the humidity from after the rains and so on. So also we can push in maturity in late harvests to go into concentration, to go to search the maturity of the seed, which mm-hmm. is the third ingredient.
Okay.
To make an incredible wine, you have always to understand the language of the nature. You have to understand the cyclic part because she teaches you that everything has a start and everything has an end. So it's everything always changing. And therefore, you also have to understand that the plants have no idea that she's producing wine. She's just producing a seed to continue on.
Exactly.
And that's
it. It's reproduction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she talks to you with flavors. She talks with you colors. All those are languages of mm-hmm. nature. So therefore, into understanding what is the top quality for the nature, you have to understand those three languages. And when you get all those three points in the line, mm-hmm. then you cannot permit yourself to make mistakes in the cellar.
Okay.
So then is the part of the human to interact with the wine, to understand its path, how to take care
mm-hmm.
from what he was working so hard all the year, because you have only one chance and you cannot miss it.
Of course.
And also in that point of view, our main goal is to talk about territory, because it's the only thing that was before us and that will remain after us.
Okay.
So each winemaker have always the obligation to talk about the top quality, to leave an important message mm-hmm. of to never see, like to say, our territories were already abandoned after the First World War because the economy was totally stagnated.
Okay.
So therefore, give the opportunity to valorize our hills,
mm-hmm.
our territory, in order to not see them again abandoned, because those are the places where you can do incredible wines.
Okay.
So we always have to ask ourselves where we are, what we can do, and from where we are, mm-hmm. we can do incredible fruit.
Okay.
This is it.
So we talked about these elements, and we talked a little bit about where we find your winery. So what is sort of special about this particular place, and what is the thing about this place that leads you to make the types of wines that you do? or is the style of wines that you make based solely upon choice?
It's always a choice.
Okay.
When we get to the cellar, because actually the first three vintages that my father produced were white vinification.
Okay.
So quite technical, which is great because he understood what actually he was losing in a way of process. Now, when he was tasting the grapes, he was saying, I feel this crunchiness, like mm-hmm. I feel this acidity right here. I feel this really long, incredible mouth, but at a certain point he was missing those things in the wines. Wines were perfect,
okay.
Beautiful wines.
When was this exactly?
So the first bottle produced was in vintage 1998.
Oh, okay.
2001, he actually started the first maceration, thanks also to many talks and share thoughts with other producers of the area at the time. So my father was quite lucky also in that point of view to be able to listen. And also he was smart enough to think with his own head,
mm-hmm.
not with what the market was saying, because if he would listen to the market, he would still now will do another path. So my father actually chose to macerate when maceration was quite not a trend,
okay.
Nothing. So I don't like actually the word really orange.
Right.
It's a thing now about many producers, or let's say many on the market, we are seen as orange wine producers, but actually we are making a white wine with a technique of a red one, but it's always talking about a white wine macerated.
Right.
Because again, as I said before, nature speaks to you with the color, and the color of orange, apart if you are using Pinot Grigio, from the color of the skin, as it's quite more intense in the purple. The color of the wine should be always gold with hints of green, yellow, alive.
Okay.
Should
okay.
be shiny like the sun, as the end, the vine is a plant of sun.
Okay.
If you start to see like dark shadows, a little bit cloudy, not really like death, that not alive, not bright,
okay.
not with light, then you understand that there's something bad going on.
Okay.
But if I return back to your question, sorry, I tend to,
that's okay.
to go left and right.
No, but I love the analogy of the brightness and green and yellow is as opposed to like orange, which is sort of what happens in the fall when the vine starts to, you know, go dormant and go to
exactly.
sleep for the winter. Okay. I really love that analogy between the colors of the wine and the colors of nature.
But also, it's as I said, no, nature is cyclic.
Mm-hmm.
So also on the grape, when you see on a white variety grape an orange berry,
okay,
you can understand. And then when you extract it, you see it, there was a break on the skin. So therefore, with the oxygen, the fermentation can start as the sugar level inside the berry, all the part of alive on the grape can induce the fermentation mm-hmm. on the skin, which is a part natural of the grape. But as nature goes on, there's the part of alcoholic fermentation
right.
that gets into, that overs, that take over also the bacteria part. So it goes into vinegar.
Okay.
So the cyclic part is always berry. When gets cracked, the oxygen with sugars induce fermentation. The yeast have done its part. Bacteria takes over, goes into bacteria fermentation, therefore vinegar.
Okay.
And there the color change.
Okay.
And it begins to be orange.
So orange is almost like a warning sign.
Yeah, it's already done.
It's already done.
It's already
not a
done.
It's,
no,
oh,
no.
Ah,
it's already
okay.
done.
Wow.
And when you taste it, you feel it.
Okay.
Apart from when you have botrytis. When you have botrytis, the color of the berry is purple.
Ah, okay. Because we're going to talk about botrytis because
yes.
there's something very interesting about your wines and botrytis, and I wanted to get that to that mm-hmm. later on. But what I did want to talk about a little bit, and loving the explanations that you're giving for what you do, but I want to talk a little bit about you first, because you did not plan on getting into the wine business at all. You actually studied what? Economics, I think.
Economical engineering.
Yeah, economical engineering.
Yeah. My father never forced us to go on with the winery.
Okay, well, that's good.
And also he never wanted us to study agronomy or enology. He didn't want us to be, in a way, afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Because he always said that if you are too technics, you tend to feel like a god. So therefore you feel that you can command nature and decompose it and compose it again. But to say also knowledge is really important. You cannot do wine without knowing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I have started in a way on my own.
Okay.
But he wanted us to choose other schools just to enlarge our views, mm-hmm. to be more elastic into the mentality.
So you went out and studied something different.
Exactly.
But did you always have this idea that you were going to stay at the
winery? I have it in the belly.
Okay.
But I was doubting that in my head.
Okay.
I consider myself really a rational mm-hmm. person. So therefore, my head was really doubting in a way. But at a certain point, I really remember exactly the moment that I was also working in other different areas and everything because I wanted to experience. I was really in love with the automotive industry. I was really into it. But, you know, also probably worse or bad boyfriend's decisions and so on that probably were not really into accepting me in a wine world, but this is why then I get single.
Okay.
But I had to choose because I felt that the part in my belly was getting stronger and stronger, you know, that there's something was telling me that I was doing a mistake of not choosing wine. And I was always involved in the vineyards. I always helped in a way because it was a family estate.
Yeah.
I always felt the importance and I was always charmed. The curiosity was always spreading, you know, many questions and everything. And I saw my father looking at me, but he never actually like said, "Oh, Tamara, but you think that you would love to do it?" No. He let me be.
Mm-hmm.
So then I came up in the vineyards. It was summertime, July 2016. And I said that, you know what, I have to talk to you. I just look at the vineyards, I feel it. And then I had just to put some work into the vineyards for the next day. And I just get back home, sit to the table. I said, "Dad, let's talk. I have something to tell you."
Wow.
He was a little bit afraid. He had no idea what was coming on.
Okay.
And, and he said,
that's something the father never wants to hear, dad, from their daughter, especially dad, they need to talk.
I said, "You know what? I want to be a winemaker."
Wow. You said right then.
Yeah.
And so what was it in the vineyard that night that just flipped that switch?
Probably it was the scenario the calm that the vineyard was giving me. It was like looking at the vineyards and saw it, like how she was growing. I don't know, that the energy that the place was giving me.
Mm-hmm.
It's true that Calvario is something, in an energetical point of view, incredible. The feelings that can give you. But from how I was growing up, all the things that I saw from the soil, from taking up the vineyards, from the harvest point of view, bottling and so on, it was for me charming. Looking at the grapes, looking at the work done, like how the leaf was turning, the light, how was leaving the moment. It just gets to me. It's difficult to explain it, how the feeling was, but it was just a click. But talking about also, I never really answer you to the question that you put me before, no, about the charm of Monte Calvario, about the places that we are. You know, it's something really important, as I said, that you choose the right soil, no?
Mm-hmm.
And Monte Calvario has this incredible stratification of marl and sandstone, this flesh that actually you can have like three different colors. You can have a gray, you can have more yellowy, you can have more red, a ponca, depending on the components that can be more present in it. And we have a more like grayish, with much more present of marl.
Okay.
And it's like a little bit sandish. It depends in certain areas. We can have more stones or less. It depends really by the veins that can be. But it's quite beautiful because we have also a change of elevation from 90 meters above sea level, but we get also to almost 200.
Wow, okay.
So it's a great hill to walk, but you can see so many things change in so few meters. And apart from that, also, as I said, the winds are really important. And this is why also the choice to work with Malvasia is perfect, because she needs always this seaside wind. Otherwise, you don't get the characteristic of balsamic, of herbal notes, and really characteristic of her. And then this helped us to get from a mid-September harvest of Tokaj So to get into a amazing ripeness without losing it, because the Tokaj is really subtle. The skin is so thin that can totally, from one day to another, you can just lose it.
Yeah.
So you have to be really, really there on time with the beautiful vineyards that we have, with the maniacal precision chirurgical that we have also. We can keep it at least from the end of first week of September till the second week of September. It really depends also by the vintages. But we can go on till mid of October with Ribolla Gialla. So it's quite an extended harvest divided between those different varieties. We actually today work mainly with Tokaj Friulano, with Malvasia Istriana, and with Ribolla Gialla.
Okay, so those are your three whites.
Yeah, which I really want to continue on. We actually have also other varieties, because my father, till 94, I don't blame himself, because he wanted to do the best that he could. Mm-hmm. And at the time it was said that if you don't plant international varieties, you can never do a really great wine.
Okay.
So actually he planted also Chardonnay, he planted Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, some Pinot Grigio also.
Mm-hmm.
And we have those varieties. And also my grandpa told me always that the vine can permit you many mistakes, can let you do many mistakes. Okay. She will always forgive you. She's a really forgiving plant. It's true, it's true. You can plant her in many places, but the question that a winemaker should always ask himself, am I doing the 99% of top quality? Am I choosing the right variety that she will be able to reach the 99% of quality?
Okay.
In order of, when I say quality for me, is talking about the possibility that she reaches, that she reached the perfect maturity of the seed, but at the same time that she's in the perfect balance also with the sugars, with the acidity,
mm-hmm.
with all the technical maturity part. So this is why I go back to the second point, no? So not only soil, but also choosing the right variety.
Okay. And so probably, knowing your territory enough, not just the type of soil, but knowing the very specific places where certain varieties need to be planted.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So this is probably all those things, all those thoughts that I was always listening to at the table, because to say my father, as he started from nothing, he had to make a name in a way. Mm-hmm. So we had always the house full of people. So also the exchanging part of stories.
Okay.
Of, it was always charming, you know, to open the bottle, to taste. Also this make me realize like how deep it was rooted, the wine in our culture, mm-hmm. like how charming it was, as you could go just two hills left and wines could totally change.
Right.
Or even talking about Collio and Carso or Collio Orientali.
Okay.
So also our neighbors, Berda, Vitava Valley.
Right.
We are so close. We share, apart from Carso, we share Collio Orientali, Collio, Berda, Vipava Valley, we share the same soil, but
exactly.
how things can change due to the winds,
mm-hmm.
the expositions, the temperature, how they change and therefore can give a change to the wine. So all those things were for me something beautiful. And also the part of learning that wine is not just alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Also the choice to do maceration, it was like the search for that crunchy part, no, like a food.
Yeah.
And also the definition of food for soul is for us really important, because you don't drink it just to drink. You drink it because you share a table.
Yeah.
You share also not a table, but a moment with a friend or with a place in a way,
right.
also of just listening to a music or just reading a book.
Right.
So it's something to feel good with ourselves, to celebrate ourselves or a moment, or mm-hmm. as I said before, a friend. So all those, everything led to that decision to macerate
okay.
for my father, to be a winemaker for me, are things so deep rooted in our territory, in ourselves, that I was lucky enough to realize it,
okay.
not to not too late.
I remember when I visited the winery with Damian, this idea of croccante, crispy, yes, right? Crunchy sort of came out. So he feels that if you don't have the maceration, if you don't do a little bit of maceration with the whites, you lose this crunchiness, this croccantezza, this crispiness. Describe that a little bit more to me. What exactly does that mean? And how would you define your wines in general? If we don't define them as orange wines, because you said they're not orange, how would you describe the wines that you make, especially the whites? The reds we can talk about a little bit later, but the whites especially. How would you describe them? How would you define them?
But, you know, let's start from the point that maceration actually is not making something better.
Okay.
That's really important to understand. Maceration is just showing you what you have done. So it's just extracting all the work from, let's say, 364 days, because the last one is picking, no,
right,
it's harvest time.
Fantastic.
So it's just showing you all the detailed work that you have done. So extracting the, if we have talked to about the ductile part of tannins of Ribolla Gialla, so she's not aromatic at all.
Right.
But when you macerate, you extract her character that is... it's just enwrapped in that beautiful thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
And when you taste it in the vineyards and those tannins just gets to you all over your mouth,
right,
in a velvety way, you say, well, what am I doing? You know, I taste the wine and I say, well, where are those tannins?
Okay.
Is this Ribolla Gialla?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of perception, how... also to say, wine is an art, and the winemaker is the artist. So therefore, who am I to judge an art that won't, with a knife, just cut and leave a hole that every person can have an explanation for what they feel when they see that that art. My father chose to be a realist, mm-hmm, in a way.
Okay.
But it's more on choosing to shoot a photo also and let all the small details be shown.
Okay.
Because...
So making sure everything is in focus.
Yes, exactly. Wine is only... It's only actually a picture of that exact time of the picking, of the harvest. It's just translating with the color. For the paint, is looking at it. For the wine is feeling it.
Okay.
So you feel the rhythm of the vintage. You can feel if the seed was getting mature really fast, getting ripe really fast or really slow. You feel in the perception of the energy in the mouth.
Okay.
It's like also with the music. And please sing later. Huh?
Okay.
It's same with the music, because if we start to now sing really rock or metal song, it will be for me like tasting a really hot vintage, because the rhythm is high.
Okay.
The energy is incredible, no? So therefore also the seed was getting ripe really fast, a lot of sun, a lot of wind. It was like it goes into raisins.
Okay.
This is the part of an extreme hot vintage.
Okay.
If we go therefore in the extreme opposite of a cold one, which we can get thanks to our microclimate,
mm-hmm,
we go into botrytis, as I mentioned before.
Exactly.
So it means that we have less sun, we have a little bit more of rain, with interruption, with part of sunny days, but the humidity change, the wind get to blow out the humidity, but... it gets into this slow ripening cycle,
mm-hmm,
that you cannot compare anymore Pantera, Iron Maidens, to an incredible Rachmaninoff.
Okay.
Or Beethoven.
Okay.
The classical, like when you're seated in a sofa listening to that beautiful music, it's not anymore like being in a pogo in the first row, of course.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So... those feelings are always connected to the first element, knows the maturity of the seed.
Okay.
So this is our signature of our territory.
Okay.
We are just part of, we are just a small drop at the end. Mm-hmm. No? We, you know, 15 hectares, Collio count 1,500 hectares in total. No? So we are a small, small part.
1%?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not that small.
It is. Oh, come on.
1%, that's okay.
I'm only losing myself, probably.
I'll bring you back. Okay. We're talking about botrytis.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I noticed is that on your site, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's for Malvasia, you have a chart that shows which years you had botrytis and which years you didn't have botrytis. Mm-hmm. Is that true? That's the Malvasia, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or we is have that another
in,
wine?
No,
I'm
no,
of?
In all the wines. We replace the chart in all our wine. When you just click on a wine,
exactly,
you can find in every wine the differences between the vintages.
Okay.
Which is for us really important that the because person that choose our wine know that in that vintage was a hot one or a cold one.
Or a botrytis one.
Exactly. So there are many percentages different. We usually do like an average.
Okay.
I would love to get more into the that of communication about the vintages, but it's the problem is always that we have 24 hours, you know, when that's the problem.
And you need to sleep for at least four
exactly.
or five of them. Yeah.
Because at the end, me and my father, we are always in the vineyards, if needed in the office,
right.
From the documents part.
Because the thing that struck me about that chart, right, is when you look at that chart and you see, okay, botrytis, no botrytis, okay, well, doesn't that make your job more difficult to sort of say, oh, okay, I really love, you know, Podversich's Malvasia, and I had the 2017 and it was amazing. And then you go back next year and you have the 2018. Oh, wait a second, there's no botrytis and the wine is so different. How do you manage expectations for people who fall in love with one type of your Malvasia and then the next year they get another?
You know, at the end, I believe that the beauty of our world is this distinctive part of the vintages.
Okay.
Is the catchy part, because for me it's quite the magic of never knowing what will come after.
Right.
And what we are doing actually, we are just letting the territory speak for what it is. We as humans, we are only walking with the vineyard,
okay,
making right that the plants are feeling good,
right?
So it's our part to let speak the nature for what was she doing in mm-hmm. that year. It's okay. Also true that, you know, I remember really vividly from the first vintage that my father just asked me, okay, Tamara, so now that you have done the first vintage, what you have learned for the next one? No, and I was so proud of myself that I make an incredible technical analytics about what we have done, what we could improve. No, this is that. So probably we could be better there. No. And then say, okay, Tamara, you have not understand a thing.
Wow.
Because actually the beauty of our work is that every time that a harvest is finished, you have to turn the page and it's completely blank.
Uh-huh.
Every
okay.
year is a new year. Every year is something changing. Also because every year the vineyard is 1 year older.
Right. Okay. And so the plants change.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the beauty is that we can give in our territory those beautiful differences.
Okay.
And this is the beauty about feeling a hot vintage, a cold vintage, a medium with 60% botrytis vintage. You can have also jazz, blues, no? Talking about
okay.
music.
Exactly.
And I believe that this is charming. We don't produce many bottles.
Mm.
And to do a monochromatic color gray is not part of the nature.
Nice.
Nature is made about color, shades, and this is who we are and this is what we show. So
okay.
It's not intervening with our hand that we want to make a product same every year because it's not a product, it's something alive.
Okay.
And again, it's a picture.
Mm.
Also, we are different in our way, no?
Exactly.
Nature is never replicating the same thing on and on.
Exactly.
She is always changing. Therefore, it's important for us to let her change.
Okay.
Again, we are not God.
Exactly. You have to go with what you you've been given. We've spoken a lot about white wines, but we haven't mentioned the fact that you actually do make some red wines. Tell us a little bit about the reds that you make, or the red that you make. Do you make one or two red wines?
Two. And let me tell you,
okay,
one is Pinot Grigio, even if you cannot be really into saying me that Pinot Grigio is red, but the skin of Pinot Grigio is violet. It doesn't have that much color, mm-hmm. like Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, that are the two other varieties that we use it, we work with it in a blend,
okay.
that is Prelit. And Pinot Grigio is, this is why I said that the only time that wine could have an orange hint, if it's Pinot Grigio macerated, is added in the blend.
Okay.
This is the only part, because it has this like a little bit ramato.
Okay.
But quite more like we let from 30 days could be also in maceration, because we want that the alcoholic fermentation is done. And we let also the head to sink nicely a little bit to release carbon.
So you let the cap sink to the bottom before you.
Yeah, so that the carbonic gets released gets released nicely. I have tried to do malolactic also on the skins with Pinot Grigio, and it's true, because we saw usually it's not done due to the stability of the color. It can be reduced as the skin gets it back.
Mm-hmm.
So this is nice, not because nature gives you, but also takes, you know, again, but what the beautiful part is that I have those two trials now in the cellar, as from the vineyard that I have bought. Now, finally, we have a little bit more of Pinot Grigio. So I could do those trials before, which was not possible. And you get two wines that are completely different.
Okay.
You have in the first one, that was the Malo not done on the skins. It was the color is more vivid, a little bit more into the violet,
right,
purple shades, with beautiful notes like small fruits, but also flowery, but with a mouth more vertical in a way. But the texture, if you feel it, of tannins in the second one with the malolactic done on the skin, it has like a trama, how you say, the trama of the clothes. No, when you stitch the
weaved together. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Weaved together. I could never say that word.
You were doing the thing with your hands.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
thank
I understood.
So it's the part of how the tannins are weaved all together is something charming, amazing. So usually the Merlot Cabernet Sauvignon, I have done also a trial on Merlot with malolactic, and it doesn't actually lose that much of color, but it's always charming. But, you know, at the end, for me, talking about the territory, for me, my focus in my 30 vintages possible to as a winemaker, because everyone have to realize that each winemaker, as my father says, you can have 30 vintages. Then you have to accept 10 vintages of generational change, and other 10 vintages like before and after, no, for the generational part. If you don't have the possibility to have a change after you, no, okay, you can try to push other 30 vintages, but you have to accept, as I'm like punching left and right to find my space. I'm lucky enough that my father is seeing that, and he's letting me be even year by year more responsible.
Oh, okay.
To say this is why I'm saying about the parallel that we are, the climate that we have. For me, the focus of identity of our hills will be Tokaj, Ribolla, Gialla, and Malvasia Istriana. That's it. That's for me important.
So, and you make two blends. So the Prelit is the red blend, and then the Capria is the white blend.
Yeah, where actually is the blend with Chardonnay, Malvasia, Tokaj. We don't produce pure Chardonnay.
Okay.
It's always used only in the blend. And actually Capria, that means drop in Slovenian.
Okay.
As our mother language is Slovenian.
Right.
It's, I would love to continue it without the Chardonnay, but with Ribolla Gialla.
Ah, okay. So Ribolla Malvasia Tokaj.
Exactly.
The classic sort of Collio Bianco.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
This is it.
Okay. So do you prefer making blends, or do you prefer making monovarietal wines? What sort of, you know, excites you more as a winemaker?
You know, for me, the blend is the most complete wine that we can have, because it gets together so many different characters all in one glass that can show you what actually our territory it is.
Mm-hmm.
So usually, traditionally, the vineyards also were co-planted between different varieties.
Right.
And they were picked also everything at the same time, because Ribolla Gialla had a little bit more of acidity. Astacai doesn't have it that much, but it was nicely aromatic. Malvasia was quite white in the mouth, so it was binding everything together. For how we evolve, because also tradition doesn't mean copy everything that in the past was done.
Mm-hmm.
It means understanding what was done, what was okay done, and what was a mistake,
right,
and evolve from that. No. So by looking, as I said, to the maturity of the seed, I don't want to go on as in the past was about picking everything at the same time, but looking at the ripeness of the seed and putting together the shy Ribolla Gialla with the charming Malvasia, together with the sexy Tokaj.
Oh.
Let's say sexy.
Yeah, when you did the podcast with me a couple of years ago, we talked about how would you describe, you know, Malvasia as a guy, or how would you describe Tokaj as a guy? It was a great moment there when you talked about, you know, all those different things. Are there any grape varieties that you don't work with that you would love to work with, that you would love to try making wines from a particular type of grape in your area?
In our vineyards, no.
Okay.
Because again, as I explained, for how we learned to walk on our land, those are the varieties
that works
best. If I will have the possibility to do a magnificent work with a friend just to share like a piece of mortadella when I will be probably in my pension, I would love to try with Whiskey Pettino.
Really?
But looking at the Colli Orientali.
Hmm.
Hills.
Why Whiskey Pettino? That's interesting. I swore that you were going to say Pinot Nero, because you actually did vineyard experience in Burgundy.
Yeah, but you know, I don't want to move from Friuli. My land is here, you know.
That I like.
So I love France. For me, it's like a second home. And I was thinking about it, because you know, when you go abroad, when you can get just in love with the place, and your heart can also play an important part. But it never tricked me that much like our land.
Okay.
It will be for me also Vipava Valley, something charming with the winds that they have, a little bit more cold. It could be also something amazing, but also to push with Ribolla Gialla, with some Tokaj, that will be really nice.
Mm.
If I will have to choose a totally different place, it will be for me really difficult.
A totally different place?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, you it's obvious that you're very, very attached to your home.
Yeah, but you know, it's nice to travel. It's nice to see, because then you realize that who you actually are, where you actually are growing up, and what are your possibilities. But
so,
again, you have to choose, no?
Yeah. In your travels, have you found anything, or either in your time in Burgundy or just traveling for your own pleasure or tasting other wines, have you run across anything that influenced maybe the way you thought about making your wine, saying, I need to do a little bit more of that like they do there, or this wine has this characteristic that I want to bring out in my wines? Has anything ever influenced you that way?
I believe that my travels made me day by day more sure about myself.
Okay. More secure.
Secure. Thank you. In a way of observing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw so many interesting techniques from the vineyard to the cellar, and the observant part on being always more sure, having doubts, because this means also to be sure.
Okay.
That you put in yourself into doubt. It's also realizing where I am and what I can do. I was like in love with the milk treatment for the oidium part in Burgundy.
Okay.
But then again, I realized that I'm in a different place. That could not work for me.
Really?
And also, again, no, I was really intrigued by, and that's happened with Paolo Vedovivet's wines. I really respect him a lot. For me, he's an incredible winemaker. And by talking with him, tasting his wines, and then also confronting with other winemakers from at the time from my area, there I get the view about trying to do my first try on Tokaj with some whole bunch fermentation. Mm-hmm. But it's not really a whole bunch. No, I'm just using the stem because I want to release all the juice. So probably this is the only time, and again, I didn't move far away, no?
Okay.
But like traveling that much abroad, confronting me with other winemakers, make me realize much more about the potential that we have into like strategic, more talkative way of welcoming the people about how our territory could work mm-hmm. all together. In that way was for me really important to see what it is happening outside. But in a way of like managing the vineyards, so therefore could be interesting, but not always the right choice for your vineyards.
Okay. So I heard recently one time somebody said that people don't buy what you make, they buy why you make it. So why do you make the wine that you make? What is your why?
Soul. Territory. To keep it alive. To feel our roots deep, profound. To put a bottle in, to sit at a table in Melbourne, in Tokyo, and feel at home.
Fantastic.
To bring just a drop of who we are, of where we are. That's the most charming and important part of our road mm-hmm. that we took. Could be steep, not really easy, but this is what's something that wine gives me: the feeling of a place, the feeling of the people that that work together, and the feeling of the potential mm-hmm. that land and that variety that can give you. So this is. Why? Because you have to show, you are obliged to show the maximum potential. Mm-hmm.
I love that answer. That's a great answer. So how about a wine that you've had maybe that is super memorable, obviously not your own wine, but do you have like a wine that you've drunk in your life that has stuck with you, that has not necessarily influenced the way that you've made wine, but just when you've had a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, you're like, wow, I got to remember this wine forever. You take the bottle home and put it on a shelf and say, wow, that was really something. Anything that you've had that really very memorable, what was it?
It happened. I did it. I take the bottle and bring it home because it was something spectacular. And actually, it was a beautiful trip to Burgundy mm-hmm. with family friends. I really love them because together with them, I have the possibility to taste some incredible wines. That it was a 94 Barolo of Fenocchio was something outstanding. Actually, the last vintage that he produced before he died. And it was something so charming, the texture, the fruit, the feeling of the territory. It was so rich, still alive. You will never say that it was 94. Probably I was more feeling older than the wine, as same vintage. No, so also 94 was not considered as a great vintage, no, all over the world.
Okay.
So, but it was something so unbelievable. And by tasting it at on the table with Le Chapelle of Rousseau, like, and it's in another incredible wine. It was 2009. Like in comparison, Fenocchio was eating alive.
Really?
Everything. It was something so vivid, so alive, so charming, so intense. Like the bottle just finished in a sip. I said, no, where's the hole? What's going on? That was something incredible. But also, again, for me, Piemonte is quite charming.
Okay.
Also, I had a Magnum of Brunate 2011 of Rinaldi. Charming.
Really?
Absolutely lovely.
Hmm.
Lovely, lovely. Talking about whites, if I have to say, again, 2011, the Vitoska of the Pivets.
Okay.
It was a beautiful night, shared with a friend. Beautiful. Hmm. Beautiful, the texture. So something, again, crunchy.
Crunchy, yeah.
Sapid. And 95, again, for me, strange to say, because I have troubles with the whites of Burgundy. But it was a Corton Charlemagne of Chandon de Briaye, 95. Absolutely love it.
Wow.
Absolutely.
So you were born in 1994.
Yes.
And this is 2024.
Exactly.
So you're going to be 30 this year.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I remember how traumatizing turning 29 was for me. That was 30 years ago. But anyway.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, even if I will turn to 30, yeah. Actually, they always say to me that to be 30, it means to be also 25, 20, 15, and 5. So it's great to be.
Okay. Yeah, you can't get to 30 exactly. Without all those other ones. So
same as the vineyard. Yeah, you always see how it grows.
Big 30th birthday party for you this
year. Exactly.
Mm, sounds great. Sounds great. Laika, did we have any questions from you?
Well, there's no questions from the audience. So that's I think that's a wrap for today. So yes, thank you so much. It has been a fantastic conversation. Thanks a lot, Tamara and Wayne. Thank you for this conversation. And this podcast is going to be up on Italian Wine Podcast. Yes. Okay.
Thank you, Laika. Thank you, Tamara.
Of course. Ciao, everyone. Bye. Ciao, ciao.
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 Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.